is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor. I welcome my colleague Conrad Black, the distinguished biographer, writing in Canada. He lives in Toronto. He's a lucky member of the Canadian citizenry as well as a member of the House of Lords as Lord Black. But now we observe Citizen Black observing Mr. Trudeau, the Prime Minister of a minority government in Ottawa, and environmentalism in Canada. The puzzle here, and Conrad writes of this in the National Post, is what kind of environmentalism has grown in great favor in Canada? Is it different from the environmentalism, the concerns, the alarmism that we have in the United States, and also the paradox of Canada's environmentalism alongside the need to be prosperous? I'm thinking of the Keystone XL pipeline, the oil sands, the pipelines that carry fuel back and forth to the United States, and anticipating both of us working together for a better North America. Conrad, a very good evening to you. How would you characterize the environmental movement in Canada? Does it match up with what we see in the U.S., or is it distinct? Good evening to you.
Good evening to you, John. I think it, like everything else, it's a little quieter and more serene, you know. I mean, the obstacle here is that the population of the country is only a little less than 40 million, and a distinct part of the country is the oil-producing area. And in that sense, Alberta and Saskatchewan are a little like Texas and Oklahoma. And it is really almost the whole industry and the whole of the economy. And the Trudeau's party, the Liberal Party, doesn't do well there for a variety of reasons, and hasn't. It never has done well there, going back to his father's day and beyond. If you get too vigorous in your championship of the environment and translate it into these theories that we must roll back the use of fossil fuel or potentially foreshorten human life, then you're basically directly making economic war on a substantial part of the country, representing, I guess, 15 or 20% of the population. And in general, nobody wants the government of the country or the public policy of the country to be unreasonably oppressive of any part of the country. And so you get this regional challenge, including, you know, we have had in this country before threats to secede from the country by different places. Now, they never get a majority, so we never get very far with it. And there's no prospect of a civil war or anything like that. But anyone trying to govern Canada and sitting in the capital of the country purporting to do so has to be careful of that kind of thing. So what they try to do, all of the parties up to a point, is produce a sort of serenade of ecological good intentions, but try not to be completely oppressive of the oil industry, because it is the country's most profitable industry. But we have this absurd situation now where parts of eastern Canada will not tolerate pipelines being built there. So we are importing oil in the east of Canada. Montreal in the east imports its oil from the Middle East, which is nonsense. And yet we have a surplus in the country of oil. And we were going to export it chiefly through the XL pipeline, but your new president shut that down on the day he was inaugurated, which did lead to it wasn't much noticed in the U.S., but did lead to a rather sharpish exchange between the two governments.
I also mentioned, because I've recently been educated about the matter, there's another pipeline called Enbridge 5, Line 5, that extends from Ontario into the Midwest of the United States through Michigan. That's at issue because the governor of Michigan wants it shut down. The Canadian government, led by Mr. Trudeau, wants it to be maintained because, of course, it's prosperity. It's jobs, jobs, jobs. So let's point to Trudeau.
Yeah, not only that, John, part of it leads back into Canada. You know, there's a place where you get from Western Canada to Eastern Canada or vice versa most efficiently by going through Michigan. And that's where that is. So it would actually cut off the supply of some oil to Canada itself. That's not really, that's an international matter, and that shouldn't be in the hands of a state government.
Tens of thousands of jobs, lots of prosperity. And here's the puzzle. Canada has resources that are the envy of the planet. And there's the puzzle.
Absolutely.
There's the puzzle, the environmentalists.
Our reserves are greater than anyone except Saudi Arabia.
And then there's your mining industry, the stuff we don't even know about. So are the environmentalists subdued because their parents work for mining companies? I'm trying to figure this out. Trudeau presents himself as green all the time. And yet he's the head of an economy that we need in the United States. We depend upon the trade with Canada because of our natural resources. So does the rest of the planet when and if they come to their senses. So what does green look like in Canada? Would we recognize it in the United States? You know, we have some very proud green here.
Oh, yeah. You have plenty of green. I don't think you would. I'll tell you why. For the longest time, Canada was a rich resources country, still is, but we were hewers of wood and drawers of water and essentially the great importers of natural resources would keep bringing more into production around the world to keep the price of every commodity, base metals and so forth, quite low. You know, we always had problems pricing our nickel, for example, because the Japanese kept opening new nickel mines in Indonesia and places. Even though they would lose money, they would keep the price of nickel low. Well, once China and India, with what, a 40% or thereabouts of the population of the world, became intrigued by and determined to achieve economic growth, the demand for base metals, precious metals, energy, and forest products, all of which Canada has in great abundance, all of it, went up, and we should have been absolutely in a kind of economic heaven. But the problem with it was contemporaneous with this irrational, other than in tactical terms, focusing on fossil fuel and other aspects of ecology. And what really happened, as you know, is when the international left was defeated in the Cold War, they piled onto this bandwagon of conservation and attacked capitalism from another angle, from the impeccable perspective of saving the planet from itself. And so we have is a failure to explain clearly to the public in this country what is at stake and what the different variables are, and then you have a public discussion, a debate in the legislature, parliament, and then you elaborate public policy. Instead, we still are shadow boxing a lot of image making and grandstanding and gaslighting and nonsense. In the United States, I think it is a much more direct competition between the left and the right.
Another puzzle. You report in the National Post that the conservative leader, newly elected conservative leader, Aaron O'Toole, says the debate is over about fossil fuel generating environmental damage. The debate is over. And you immediately follow that with contradictions because of the book by Stephen Koonin. Is Mr. O'Toole a recipient of Stephen Koonin's book?
Yeah, I don't know. He's certainly heard of it now. I don't know whether he's troubled to buy it or not. But, particularly speaking to an American network, I don't want to say anything impolite about any of our leaders, but, you can get into a detailed discussion of this would be far beyond what anything.
I didn't mean to be impolite about Aaron O'Toole. He's a worthy leader.
No, but the problem is, for a variety of reasons I could go into, the Liberal Party in this country is the most successful political party of any large country in the world. And from 1896 to the present, it's held office two-thirds of the time. The Republicans have a slight advantage in the Democrats. The British Conservatives have a rather larger advantage on their opponents, the Labour Party, and before that, the Liberals. But not anything like this. And a lot of it is because of the traditional strength of the Liberal Party in French Canada, which is about a third of the country. But what you've got are conservatives who much of their history in the last 120 years have really just been, in effect, saying, we agree with the Liberals, but we'll do it better. And people who say that don't win very often because, in general, Liberals make better Liberals than the conservatives do, as conservatives make better conservatives than the Liberals do. And they haven't sold conservatism. And that's their problem. But we've had really 1.5 party rule here. Now, Brian Mulroney did very well. He's from Quebec and he cracked Quebec and he showed that it is possible to defeat the Liberal Party. But prior to that, from 1896 to 1984, that's 92 years. The Liberal Party was in office something like 68 years in that time. It's just hard to beat them on the arithmetic.
And therefore, what we have here is some contradictions in your governance. The environmentalists are in charge, but they acknowledge the prosperity derives from exploiting the natural resources, especially fossil fuel. Is that all correct?
Yes, and they haven't thought it through, and they haven't explained it. And if I may say it, since you're kind enough to refer to what I wrote, I have been hammering this point for some time, and I'm trying to generate a heightened discussion of these things, not out of partisanship. I've supported both parties at different times, but just to have the discussion and elaborate a policy instead of, as I say, shadow boxing.
I mentioned Stephen Koonin's book. I should give the whole title because I highly recommend it. So does the National Post piece by Conrad Black, Unsettled, What Climate Science Tells Us, What It Doesn't, and Why It Matters, by Stephen Koonin, who was a member of the Obama administration and a science advisor on environmentalism. We're going to turn to American politics next. We've had a great deal of fun talking about the contradictions in Canada's politics. Well, here comes the Republican Party. This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor.